Hello, everybody that's with us. Welcome. I'm glad to see you all here. And we're going to get started. We had asked some of you to please send us in questions ahead of time. A few came in, not that many, and I'll put the first question up for all of us to see. So here it is. It's in front of you on the screen. And it starts off with, I have a question regarding our likes and dislikes of certain music. I think that music is related to our astral body and our perception of music, likes and dislikes, can be an indicator of our astral ray. What is your view on the subject? Well, before we start answering that, I think we should introduce you to the team that we are a part of. So you all hopefully know me. I'm Eva Smith. We also have Sam Sheldon. Sam, you know, please say hello.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello to everyone.
Sam is very involved on our faculty. And we also have Francis Donald. So Francis, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
So some of you might have Francis or Sam as your faculty advisors. And so we've got a really good team of faculty members, and I hope we can really assist you here with any questions and thoughts that you have. Also, in behind the scenes, there are all our wonderful helpers, and we have Joe, who's with us, Joe Waltz. We have Brett, who's with us, and we also always have BL with us. So we have quite a few people in behind the scenes to help us out, especially with hand raising and the likes. Now, if you've not done this before, you may not be familiar with how the hand raising works, but there is a hand to the one side of your control panel, and it looks like a hand is there on the side, and on it there is an arrow. When the arrow is pointed down, it means that there is no question. When the arrow is pointed up and you hit it and the arrow goes up, that means you're raising your hand, because the arrow is showing up. And we will try to respond as we see it and as our helpers help us out, okay? And then we'll take you off mute. As a matter of fact, as we progress, we'll try taking more and more of you off mute, and we'll see if we get any of the cacophony of sounds through the computers. That's what they tend to do. So we'll see how that works out. But we'll start with our very first question, which we have on the screen, and it had to do with music. And I think, Sam, you want to start addressing that, and then we can have other thoughts.
Okay. The question of regarding our likes and dislikes of certain music. I think that music is related to our astral body, and our perception of music, likes and dislikes, can be an indicator of our astral ray. What is your view on the subject? Well, it was good that this question was brought forward, because we could, ahead of time, kind of think about it. And we have to a certain degree. And, just in general, the astral body of humanity as a whole is, humanity as a whole is astrally polarized, so to speak, Atlantean in consciousness. That's not everybody, and in general, the astral bodies are usually either on ray 2 or ray 6, but again, that's not, there are exceptions to that. When you listen to a piece of music, whatever the genre is, whether it's classical, popular, or whatever, you may have an initial like or dislike of it that may have to do with your particular ray makeup for the emotional vehicle. And, that can be something that stays with you, or it could be something that, we can't exclude the fact that you have other bodies in your constitution, and those can have an effect on the astral. They can downplay to that. And so a piece of music that perhaps doesn't even ring a bell with you or doesn't really grab you, so to speak, may later on, you know, if you listen to it, you hear it more often, you're in the company of those that like it, you know, and it resonates more with them and you resonate with them to some degree too, you know, it may grow on you. You know, your other principles, your other bodies in your constitution may feed into that too, and you can learn to like that piece of music. You know, and it may stay with you. It may even have more of a profound effect on you later on than it would have initially, which may have not been anything, and it may even been something you dislike.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good thoughts. Francis, would you like to add anything to that?
Sure. First of all, I think that it all depends, as Sam mentioned, on your polarity. In fact, I think much more so than on the particular ray makeup of your astral body. After all, you know, the difference between the second and sixth ray is definite, but they're both on an even line. And, you know, I think it would be difficult to determine your likes based on your astral ray. But if you're polarized in the lower chakras, you're going to have a natural resonance with what I would say most of the popular music that exists today, which is designed, I know because I wrote it for years, it's designed to stimulate the lower chakras, you know, to bring that those qualities to life, especially the solar plex, and solar plexus most fundamentally, but also the sacral chakra through different rhythms. If you're polarized in your higher chakras, you find that you have to turn to other sources like Indian music or some of the classical, but not all the classical composers, in order to find a resonant response to the heart, throat, and head centers. In fact, I think that music is fundamentally astrally expressive, but it's not inherent to music that it's astrally expressive. I think when more and more of humanity moves to mental polarization, we're going to see a whole new kind of music. And Bach gave us some foreshadowing of what this was like. I was listening to Bach all morning just to get primed for this question. And, you know, he's not just a mental... he's not just expressive of the mental plane. He has deeply felt emotional rhythm in his music. But he's also capable of stimulating the mental levels. And I think that's true of also some of the other classicists like Beethoven. And in terms of the rays in the music, it's interesting to look at the expression of the rays in the music. And again, it's, at least for me, easier to identify this in classical music. Like if you take, you know, this theme that has captured the Western imagination, which is the first four notes of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, right? Where would you put that in terms of ray quality? You know, that bum 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 bum, bum 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 bum, right? I think it's very expressive of both first and sixth rays. And this is really valuable to listen to different types of music and, you know, get a sense, try to perceive the ray expression of the music. You know, there's no absolutes in this field. You know, since Dwal Kool hasn't specifically told us, you know, that such and such a piece is expressive of such and such a ray, but some of it seems just pretty clear once you have a good understanding of the different ray energies. You know, for instance, the Handel piece that goes, "Count 40, bum 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 bum." You know that piece? It's to me the ultimate expression of second ray energy. And of course, you know, I can't. There's no way to prove these things, but it can be very interesting to explore this. But back to your original question. Your astrological configuration, the influences of the planets and the signs are going to have as much determination of your likes and dislikes as, you know, the rays of your astral and personality bodies. And even more than this, if you're working through your personality, it's going to be your cultural milieu, you know. What did you grow up with? That's going to have much more influence than any of these other questions. In a way, you almost have to get past those obvious basics in order to discover how the rays influence the music you listen to.
Okay. Thank you, Francis. I agree with everything that's been said so far. I just have a couple of little comments to make, and then we can move on. And that is that way back when we were putting together our seven-ray seminars, at one time we actually started to introduce music and have our students try to identify which piece represents what ray. Now, finding the right piece to represent a ray in some cases was easy. In other cases, it was very difficult. Like a fifth ray was a hard one to locate. A third ray, in many ways, was a hard one to locate. One was easy because one is, as we know, is power. So many of the pieces, is, you know, classical pieces have that very strong, powerful sound to it that really vibrates and moves you. That's easy to see. And those peaceful pieces, you know, the very, very soft ones would be secondary and so on. But when we say to ourselves, how does the music make us feel? We use the word feel, and that word feel is an astral component, isn't it? How does the music make us feel? So like everything that's been said, how we feel about music is astral. And yet, certain music calms the thinking processes as well. It affects the brain and produces certain changes in chemicals within the brain that allow us to sometimes study better, to allow us to think a little bit better, and to be able to concentrate. Although these days I look at the teenagers and they seem to do their homework in spite of all the music around them, that to me is a little jarring, actually. And the other comment I wanted to make was that Francis talked about that, and that has to do with the lower chakras versus the higher chakras. Much of the music that's very popular these days does seem to stimulate the lower chakras. And I think the more refined one becomes, the more one is polarized in the higher chakras, one seems to enjoy more refined music. And it seems to resonate more with the upper chakras. And I think that's basically it, unless there's something else that wants to be said.
I have another comment, which is in terms of thinking of types of music that are more mental in nature, the whole jazz world has explored, I think, the mental rays as well as the mental plane. It's, you know, for a lot of people, jazz is not very accessible because there's not the obvious emotional impact to a lot of jazz is, mm-hmm. that there is with, say, popular music, you know. And so this would be, I think this is a good place to look for third and fifth ray stuff, and also for mentally polarized music.
I also thought that this new techno kind of music would be very fifth ray like, which didn't exist about 20 years ago. We didn't have that then.
Yeah, the whole thing with synthesizers and the possibilities that it brings up definitely have a mental component, you're right, yeah. And one other comment in order to just elevate it, I think the best that's out there, and I'll use as my example the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, actually lifts us to some qualities of the Buddhic plane, or it could just be the higher mental. But there you feel a light shining through the greatest of these pieces. Bach was able to do it. Beethoven was able to do it. Mozart was able to do it. Even Mahler, Gustav Mahler, who died of cancer when he was 49, and he had this horrendous struggle with shifting his understanding of self from the personality to his soul. And in his Ninth Symphony, one of the things he did is he illustrated this shift in music. And when he, in the first, is just full of all this anxiety or angst and just you know, the horror of fear, the fear of death and that type of thing. But at some point he breaks through musically and it's transcendent. And this, I mean, you know, you can make a case that it's the highest subplanes of the astral plane, but I think whenever you're talking about the first and second or second and third subplanes of the astral, you're looking at some reflection from the quality of the Buddhic, you know, and that tends to move us very, very deeply.
BL, I've unmuted you. I see that your hand is up. Is it related to this question? Do you have something you'd like to
ask? Yes. Yeah, I'm just wondering if you can recommend some book on this topic.
Well, that's Vera, right?
Yes.
Vera, okay. There's nothing I can think of. These are just thoughts that we have as a result of all the teachings. Is there anything that you would recommend, Francis?
Since I'm not in my studio, I can't pull it up this second, but I'll run over and find the title for you. There is a book.
Why don't you post it on the student forum, and then everyone can have access to it.
Thank you.
Will that work
much
for you, Vera?
Oh, yes, wonderful. Thanks.
Okay,
and I have BL unmuted. Did you have?
Yes. This is more an anecdote than anything, but I read an article several years ago that was written on romance writers, and apparently they polled them, and the music of choice of some of the most prominent romance writers was Queen. And I don't know if that had to do with the emotionalism of it and of the nature of what they were writing, or if it had to do with the creativity that it helped them express. I mean, it's like you mentioned, either with the kids and that music blasting as they're doing their studying. But I just thought that was very interesting that to be creative in writing their romance novels, women will sit there and listen to Queen.
Yeah, well, it makes perfect sense to me. It's the ultimate drama. It's almost stage drama, Queen is, you know. Didn't they do We Are the Champions of the World? Was that Queen?
Yes, yeah, you know, it was.
We are the champions. You know, it's just pure drama. And that's, of course, they're just, you know, sucking on that for their to do their romance novels. I could, sure, perfect.
Guys, if you haven't noticed, Francis has a lot of fourth ray to him. Have you noticed him singing and being dramatic? Just note all the various rays as you see them in front of your eyes. Okay, we're going to move on to the next question. Okay, I'm just going to scroll down. Okay, so this question is about the best way to answer questions of outsiders to what I am studying. How to explain what we are doing in Quest Universal and or the conference and in Moria Federation or the USR, you know, University of the Seven Rays, etc. In other words, how to translate our studies to the general public in understandable layman's terms. This is a good question because over the years, I've had to constantly shift and change the way in which I would explain what I'm involved in. And as of late, I have found that the easiest answer when I'm asked, well, what is it that you do and what is it about? I'll say I work on helping people live more consciously. And you know what? They look at me and they say, uh-huh. And I say, one of the ways we do that is through esoteric, which means that which isn't obvious, and that which isn't obvious is usually our soul or our inner self or our higher self. And I say we do it through psychology, through astrology, through philosophy, through science. And these are the various subjects that we cover at the university level or at Moria Federation. I try to keep it very short, very simple, and non-threatening. That's it. That's all I say. Any thoughts, guys?
Well, that's excellent. Yeah, this is, I think it's a fabulous question because every one of us who is interested in the ancient wisdom teachings has to deal with this.
Okay.
You know, your friends, you know, are wondering what the heck you're up to, you know, and not to mention your family. And I really like your answer. There are certain sort of universal qualities like consciousness, you know, that everybody can understand. And for most, I'd say 90% of the people who ask, that's the place to pitch it, you know, in through concepts that are universally recognized and can be discussed. You know, without introducing new terms, which is really important. And I think consciousness is, you know, one of those key terms. I'm trying to think of some other terms.
Sometimes I will use it to live in greater awareness. It's not as
awareness.
Yeah. It's not as poignant as consciousness, but it also depends who I'm speaking to. If I don't think you're going to understand consciousness, I will say, to live in greater awareness. And many times I won't even use the word soul because, again, that has baggage, you know. Yeah. And one of the things I don't want to do is I don't want to give them false or wrong ideas and wrong impressions. I don't want to turn them off. So I try to keep it as neutral as I can, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a good strategy. The one other, maybe the very next level, is the idea of the one life that pervades all things and all living things. And then you can even, you know, get into the idea that everything is alive on some level. But the idea that God is the one life that pervades all living things. And this is, you know, most people can handle a discussion along those lines. But it's one step further into the material to go there, you know. And you have to tier it, because some people really, you know, there are people who are potential students and they want to know more than just a very generalized discussion. And then it's good to have sort of the next line of response available, you know.
Before
go ahead.
I was going to say we're going to move on when you're done to Sam, but I'm going to invite you students out there to think of questions that you would like us to address, and then when you have them, you can put your hand up. Some people have actually written in a few questions, which we'll deal with in a few minutes, or comments anyway. But you go ahead, Francis.
Okay, just my last comment on this is if you have somebody who's a little more serious, I would recommend that you yourself reread or read the first six, let's see, one, two, three, four, no, four pages of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Now, don't let that freak you out. It's just called Introductory Postulates. And it's this succinct description of the ideas that are then expanded on in all of Dwalkool's writing, right? And now this isn't, you know, something you'd recommend somebody else to read. This is that you would read this yourself to, you know, recognize what he feels is the core of this teaching and then work out of that in your discussion to other people.
Could you read the first
one? That's what I have.
Could you read the first one for us before you put the book away? Francis?
I didn't hear that.
I said, could you read the first postulate for us?
Oh,
sure. Just so that we get an idea of what it is that you're recommending there and see how we...
Sure. Okay, like I said, this is not something that you would hand to somebody and say, well, you want to know what I'm up to? Read this. No, it's too... it takes more than that. I've closed the book, so I have to get back to it.
Right. It's to educate ourselves so we have the knowledge and the basis of from which we can then spring forward and talk about what it is that we're doing.
Exactly. Okay, the first postulate is there is one boundless, immutable principle, one absolute reality which antecedes all manifested conditioned being. It is beyond the range and reach of any human thought or expression. The manifested universe is contained within this absolute reality and is a conditioned symbol of it. In the totality of this manifested universe, three aspects are to be conceived. And then it goes into the three logos, which are, you know, the impersonal and then the spirit, matter, life, and then the idea of cosmic ideation. And it develops from there. But that's the first postulate.
Okay. And Sam, would you like to add anything?
Well, I was just going to say more or less what you all have said. But, you know, depending on the person you're, you know, if it's a single individual and you know kind of their orientation, you can contour your response, you know, towards their field of activity or orientation. Yeah. But if it's a group, small or large, people in general that you don't have any knowledge, and say you wanted to convey something about the seven rays without calling it the seven rays, you could say something to the effect of, you deal with, seven psychological types or patterns and their cross correlations and this kind of thing. You know, you can go into it greater or lesser, but just kind of keep it along, you know, terms that don't supposedly bring up any red flags, I guess.
Right. Now Risa has typed in her response to people, and she says, when asked, I ask them why they're asking and what they are asking. When we know the real question underneath their question, then we can answer them with more depth and responsiveness. So always, you know, you want to know, is it just curiosity? Is it truly an interest on their part? And what, in fact, are they asking, especially if they go into... if they ask a question that's not clear, to find out exactly what it is that they want to know. What is it that they're asking? That's good. And also, Risa has offered us information about some books available by Corinne Helene. And she apparently has books on esoteric aspects of music. She's written on Wagner, on Beethoven, and etc. So I'll post that on the Student Union Forum, the name, and Risa, if you have any titles maybe you can post them on the student union, and that would make it available to all students if they're interested. Okay, so we see hand up for BL. So BL, would you like to add something?
Yes, I just want to piggyback on what Francis said. On the campus, the very first lesson for the preparing for the Great Quest is, in simple terms, the study paper for the three fundamental postulates. So it's not all four, but it's three of them. And, you know, that's one of the very first things a brand new student will see. Yeah. So I think that it will give a good encapsulated version of those three postulates. And it's available, anybody on campus should have access to the preparing for the Great Quest, as it's the lowest level of the of all the courses.
Right. So. I do remember that, yeah. Okay. All right, thank you. Any other questions, people? We don't see too many hands up. And this is a question and answer period for all of you, actually. So please come forward with your questions. There's a lot that you could be asking us. We're not Michael, but we certainly will try to answer for you. Okay, Tiago, I'm going to unmute you. How's that? Okay, go for it, Tiago.
I'm trying to explain. Everybody's listening?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yesterday I was thinking about this question because I came to, with my girlfriend to a meeting because she practiced a doctrine called Spiritism.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Could you Spiritism.
Spirit.
Yeah, it's a kind of doctrine that we have here in Brazil, okay? So I came to see what it's like. When I was young, I had a contact, the first contact that came to my mind to learn more. And I was, during the meeting, I was listening to the teachings and so forth. And what I saw was exactly that. They were talking with, of course, with a different kind of technical words, okay? But it was like, sometimes like what I'm learning here in Moria. So I was afraid to talk about that with them because maybe they think that I'm wrong or some kind of sectarianism with that. So when we found a kind of group that have teachings like what we are having now in Moria Federation, and sometimes we see differences, what can we do to talk about it? Because it's like they are different, but there are a lot of in common, you know. And sometimes I think that we have to learn more what they are teaching to try to catch what is equals or not. I don't know if
you understand
me. But it's like this question. I was thinking about it last night before sleep. It's like they are in the beginning, okay? But they catch the sense of the teachings, okay? But I don't know how to express this without using the technical terms that I'm learning, because they are very, what can I say? How can I say that? They are in the beginning of this, and what I'm seeing here more is much more further. Okay? Sorry, it's like that.
Okay, So let me just comment a little bit on this and see if I'm understanding everything that you want us to cover here. There are a lot of groups out there, and I know that Brazil has a variety of different modalities that teaches or have various groups on spiritualism, on spirituality, and what I call New Age. My only concern with all these various groups is to be able to discern within yourself whether or not this is an astrally focused group that works with what we call spiritualism. Spiritualism, from our perspective of the ageless wisdom, works with works on the astral plane. It works with either with discarnate entities. It works with the ghosts, Ouija board, bringing in entities, entities that have passed away. All that kind of stuff is all relevant to the astral plane. And I know that in Brazil there are a lot of these things going on. It's very easy to get captivated by the allure of being able to work with these energies and to bring them forward. It is my understanding that it's limiting. It's limiting because you're only working with the astral plane. What we do, whether it be at the Moria Federation or at the University of the Seven Rays, is we try to not take a mystical approach, but to try to take an occult approach, which means we are working with our mind to try to then penetrate into soul, and then from soul, you know, starting to work together with personality, then to penetrate to higher levels like the spiritual triad. Most of these New Age or spiritualism groups don't work that way. They work with phenomena, which is, as I said, very alluring and very inviting because people see results. People think they're going somewhere. They think they're reaching higher levels because they can call in on various energies. But that has a lot of dangers associated with them. There's possession. You can give yourself over to someone else. You lose control. There's a lot of negativity around that from everything that I've heard, read, and understand. So I would caution to make sure, one, that you are dealing with a group that is working with soul and higher aspects, not just astral aspects. I would totally stay away from a lot of this phenomena. And there's no point sharing at this point because those people, I'm not sure, are interested in the science behind the soul, which is what we are interested in, the science behind the soul. So, Sam, Francis?
Well, I think you made some very good points there, Eva. It's, spiritualism was something that was started by, the hierarchy. I mean, they were behind it, but it became corrupted, more or less, with phenomenalism. Disincarnate entities, masquerading. I mean, all this masquerading of masters and whatnot that we have today kind of sprung from that back in the last quarter of the 1800s. And now we have a plethora of, masquerading sages, adepts, and all this kind of thing with not much substance at all behind it. And so it's good to stay away from that for the most part. There are a few individuals that come through that smelling like a rose, but they were wanting to get into something, dealing more with the real, and it just became more or less a stepping stone. But there are a lot of organizations that have mixed in, splintered off from the Theosophical Society too, and with those folks, you might have some, ground for conversation, if you're familiar with their their terminology, which is a little bit different sometimes, you know. But with the others, you know, the more phenomenalistic lower psychism and spiritualism, it is best to stay away or else just give them a few things, you know, and then see if they take it or leave it.
Okay.
You know, does
that make sense, Tiago? What we're saying, is that fitting?
Yeah. In fact, I was, that was a kind of my interpretation. What I saw is they are looking at the phenomenon, what happens outside, the incarnated and so forth. And what I'm looking for is what's happening inside, what is the essence of all of this. And they kind of lose the sense, okay? But yes, I'm trying to find a way to because my girlfriend practices it, okay? And I have to find a way to stay away from it and respect it without compromise my relationship more than I like it. Okay, so yeah, thank you. I appreciate all you told me. Thank you.
I think you touched on something very, very important here, is that phenomena is basically the outside. It's psychism, as Sam said, it's lower psychism, and it does deal with that which is outside of self. What we're working on here is God immanent. It's what is inside you, and that is soul, right? And there's a major distinction between working with spirits and energies and phenomena versus working with soul. Soul doesn't always give us all the bells and whistles and all the tantalizing allurements that the other area does, but it's the only way forward. The other is really going backwards, and that's what the Tibetan has said. He said that at one time, we all had access to that astral plane, to that lower psychism, and we were all very psychic. And some people, once they open that door, they think they're moving ahead. They think they're very spiritual because they can do things that other people cannot do. In fact, it holds them back and it retards them. So they spent a whole lifetime not moving forward. So I really caution you not to get caught in that trap.
No, I don't think I will be caught in the trap because my mind is very clear in that aspect. I have to learn more because I have to be careful with that. But I have to learn what Modern Federation is teaching me. DK is teaching me, and to not be catching on that thread. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Francis, anything? Francis, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Okay.
The only thing that there was a part of your question that we may not have covered, which is how do you respond to the terminology of somebody else's point of view? Like, say you're talking to a dyed-in-the-wool Buddhist, you know, which we know to be a legitimate path, but they use very different terms. And I think that probably the best way is to look for the next stage up, which is the universal concept that contains the ideas that you're both trying to communicate, and start at that level. Theosophy and Buddhism both have, you know, very specific terminology to describe a lot of times the same ideas, you know. Trying to find universal language, which is actually the way we started this conversation when you were talking about how to answer this question, you know, through the ideas of consciousness and awareness, to try to strip out the particular specialized language and get to a description of the ideas that you're talking about. That's all.
All right, so group, more questions. Vera, okay.
Yeah, I have a new question. So I came across with this information that when Ray comes into manifestation or out of manifestation, and I'm now referring to the cycles, smaller and larger ones, like, for example, the sixth ray is now going out.
Right.
Why is it that the ray is more strongly manifesting when it's at the point coming in or going out? Why is that?
Why it's stronger during that period of time? Is that what you're saying?
That was the information I came across, that when say, like, for example, sixth ray, when it's coming into manifestation, it's felt strongly, and also when it's going out, it's also, yeah. So why is that?
Okay, actually, that is actually not that hard to understand. If we think that a cycle is a long time, especially for the rays. It's not just a 10-year or 20-year cycle. They last a lot longer. Over that period of time, we get accustomed to the energies and to the qualities of that particular ray. So it doesn't have as great an impact on us as when it first starts to come in. Suddenly, we sense there's a difference in the energy. So therefore, it's much, much stronger from that perspective, because there's a change. There's something different that we aren't accustomed to. That's the incoming energy. Now, as the energy starts to wane and leave, again, it's the same principle that we apply. We feel that energy leaving us, waning, moving away from us, and that's all we know. That's all we're accustomed to. So we fight like crazy to hang on to what we know. And that's like the last kick at the can. It's that idea. We being humanity, don't want to let go of the familiarity. Nobody likes change. Change is very scary. So hanging on to what is familiar is why we see the sixth ray hanging in there so strongly right now. So, so strong, so militant, so obvious, and so in our faces. Because on some level, there is the feeling that things are changing. You know, we hear that all the time, news, articles that are written. Things are changing. Everything is in flux. Nothing is the same anymore. Have you noticed this? Have you noticed that? And that's because new energies are coming in. And people are afraid of the new energy, so they really work hard to keep the old. Thoughts, guys?
Yeah. Let's see, am I unmuted? One of the things that happens when a ray is passing out, like the sixth ray is being supplanted now by the seventh, is you have those who incarnate and are inherently retrogressive. That is, they hold to the old values, as Eva was saying, and it creates this tremendous conflict. For instance, you see it in American politics, where you have this, like never before, I think literally in the history of the country, do we have this extreme polarity represented by, interesting to look at the colors too, the blue and the red. But, no matter what your politics, you can see the tension and the polarity that is created. And I think it's very much connected with the passing out of the sixth ray influence and the coming in of the seventh in this case. Whereas, you know, in the middle of the cycle, as Eva said, you would tend to have more natural harmony or more agreement Because you have to remember, you know, the human race, humanity is fourth ray inherently, which is through conflict you work to achieve harmony. And so whenever you have one of these transitional periods, you're thrown into the conflict phase of that. And in the middle of a ray manifestation, you're more in the harmonious phase of it.
So it is not basically the volume of the energy coming or its nature. It is our response to new coming energies. It's basically our response.
Very well said. Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good. Thank you.
And Sam, is there anything you'd like to say to that?
Well, not much, but I'd say, you know, it's the form that has been, created as a result of the ray that is the outgoing ray, you know, has these old outworn forms, you know, either political, religious, cultural, you know, they're trying to hang on for dear life. It's, I don't know so much as the ray going out, but the form that's being left behind trying to, you know, hang in there, you know, it's like a body, you know, trying to grab on, keep that soul, you know, instead of let it go.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much. Yeah, good.
Interesting. One of the definitions of evil is just simply that which was once relevant but has now moved into the past and is no longer what should be focused on. In other words, what was once actually a holy influence, that towards which we, you know, should be moving towards, eventually loses that quality and becomes evil, literally, because to focus on it will take you into the past or would become retrogressive. This is the whole meaning of the, when they worship the golden calf, for instance. You know, it was, they were trying to hold on to the Taurian influence, and it was, that time had passed. There was nothing inherently wrong with that period of time. It's just that it was time to move on from that, just like now it's time to embrace the Aquarian age and the seventh ray energy.
Yeah, and just going back to what Francis said earlier about the politics in the United States, that's why one party, the liberals primarily, are thinking very progressively. They're thinking of new ways, liberty, which is very much Aquarian. They're thinking of groups and they're thinking of what is good for the larger. Whereas the other party is still wanting to hang on to archaic, old, what they call, what's the word they use? I can't think of the word right now, but it's old ways of being that the United States has outgrown, but they're still bringing all that back right now. They're taking away rights for women, as an example. You know, women fought for these rights. Humanity has already progressed in this area. Why go backwards? So you can see how pull to want to hang on to the old is still so strong.
Yeah, it's the rights of the individual is, you know, the idea that you should have an unhampered right to, for instance, make as much money as you possibly can, and that's good for the economy. That's the if you compare it to the difference between the personality as a separative individual and the group or the soul consciousness, it's so clearly represented by the two parties, these two points of view. And you can also see why there's no compromise, because they're such radically polarized points of view.
Are there any more questions right now? I don't see any hands up. But I did pull out a few things from the 150 course that I thought was a good area to talk about, and it has to do with what are the results that are going to be seen in studying the rays. Now, we make a big to-do about the rays because the rays are so important in understanding almost everything. They are the energies that underlie all of manifestation. They are the breaths of deity that deity has expressed. And therefore, it behooves us to really understand all the various ramifications of the rays. So if we read this little paragraph, we can actually open it up for greater discussion. So he tells us that a second result of studying the rays will be to clarify our knowledge as to the nature of man. Now, that's interesting, how the rays relate to who we are as an individual, the nature of man. Modern psychology, experimental and academic, has done much to gather information as to how a man functions. What is the nature of his reactions, the caliber of his thought apparatus, and the quality of his physical mechanism, the mode of his thinking, and the sum total of complexes, psychoses, neuroses, instincts, intuitions, and intellectual fixations, which he undoubtedly is. Medical psychology has also given us much, and we have learned that the human being is entirely conditioned by his instrument of expression and can express no more than his nervous system, brain, and glands permit. We find, however, that some of the theories, even the best proven, break down given varying conditions. The field covered by psychology today is so vast, it schools so many and varied, and its terminology so cumbersome that I can make no attempt to deal with it here. The indebtedness of the world to the trained psychologist cannot be estimated, but unless there is a key idea interjected into the whole field of thought, it will fall of its own weight and produce, as it already is producing, problems, complexes, and diseases of the mind, which are direct results of its own methods. The knowledge we now have of how men work on the physical plane as integrated personalities and how they can be expected to work given certain conditions is broad and sound, and the wideness of its grasp can be somewhat gauged if we compare what we know today with what was known 150 years ago. But it has been largely based upon a study of the abnormal and upon the form aspect, this latter being the true or being the true scientific method, and is therefore limited and circumscribed when it is put to the test in the last analysis and in the light of the undoubtedly existent supernormal. What I seek to do and the contribution I seek to make to the subject have to do with the emphasis we shall lay upon the nature of the integrating principle found within all coherent forms and on that which can, for lack of a better word, be called the soul or the self. So I'm just going to stop here for a second before I move on. What he's basically telling us is everything that we have been taught through science, through medicine, is good. It's important to know all of that, but it's limiting. It's limiting because it does not teach us anything about who we truly are, the soul or the self, right? Do we get that? It's the nature of the integrating principle. See, if the soul is the integrating principle found within all coherent forms. Coherent means they're held together, and it is the soul which is the glue that holds everything together. Okay, I'm gonna read on a little bit more because now we're getting to the main thing here. This principle, which informs the body nature and expresses its reactions through the emotional and mental states, is of course recognized by many schools of psychology, but remains nevertheless an unknown and undefinable quantity. They find it impossible to discover its origin. They know not what it is, whether or not it is an informing entity, detached and separate from the body nature. They question whether it is an integrated energetic sum total brought into existence through the fusion of body cells and therefore through the process of evolution, constituting a thinking, feeling entity, or whether it is no more than the aggregated life and consciousness of the cells themselves. So have you not found that? Most people think that, yeah, we are the sum total of all our cells and the way the brain works and the way the mind works and that there's nothing more to us. That's what so many people believe. It is with the seven groups of souls that we shall deal. and with the threefold forms in the fourth kingdom of nature, which they create, which is the human kingdom, and through which they have to express the quality of their ray group and the energy of that one of the three essential groups to which their ray is related. We shall therefore, if possible, endeavor to add to modern psychology and enrich its content with that esoteric psychology which deals with the soul or the self, the ensouling entity within the form. So this is the crux of what the seven rays is all about. It's teaching us esoteric psychology. Knowing the rays will teach us the psychology of who we are. Any comments on this? Yes, Vera.
Yeah. Yes, it's more or less like preaching to the converted. Right. All of us who are just linked, we know that and we want to know more. I was just, while you were reading it, I was thinking about that mainstream psychology, when there are here and there individuals and little groups who are venturing very modestly into this esoteric field, but more or less the psychologist or psychiatrist, they are not brave enough to be more vocal about this. And so I was just thinking about, are we, the esoteric group, are we actually presenting this teaching about the soul and various bodies in a very simple form to the large public, like a thought came to, for example, YouTube, just making some really short, concise presentation of this, which would not have the terminology more technical as we students of blue books sort of use. So that came to mind, something which is presentable, simple, and accessible to everybody, whoever can click on it. And so, yeah, what do you think?
Well, there are some wonderful videos out right now. One of our associates, his name is Justin Wilkinson. If you were to go on agelesswisdom.com and look for Justin Wilkinson under Google, just make sure you get the right Justin Wilkinson, because there's lots of them. But his website is it's agelesswisdom.com. He has so many wonderful videos that every now and then one can locate them on YouTube that talk about all these things in such a wonderful way with great pictures. He's just one. There are a whole host of other ones. I was just at a WASAC retreat, and one of the guys gave us another link. I would be very happy to put some of these links on for you guys, and you can watch them. One of them is The World Within and Without. Also, very, very well done. There are four parts to it that is on YouTube. These are all on YouTube. So we're already bridging that gap. We're already into making all of these things available. It just, people have to be interested to locate it, to find it.
Did you say Justin Wilkinson?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good, thank you.
Yes. One of the things that we have taught through the University of the Seven Rays and through the esoteric psychology course was the different ways, the different rays that psychologists use with their patients or with their clients. And it takes an esoteric individual to be able to recognize that the crisis that someone is experiencing many times is what we call a soul emergence. The soul is emerging, but most psychologists and psychiatrists don't recognize that. That's what we just read and all that upper part there, is they don't recognize that and they don't know how to deal with that, when in fact the crisis is that the soul is emerging within the person, but no one knows how to deal with that and how to advise their client to work with that. So then, of course, if you can get an esoteric psychologist to work with a client, they can therefore give them tools and techniques on how to work with that which is emerging from within. And it's always the soul that needs some kind of expression. So anybody want to say anything?
Yeah, I would say that certainly 95% of the traditional psychologists out there are trying to fix the personality with the personality.
Right.
And as a result, you get temporary results at best. And in fact, what I've heard that lately is that talk psychology is really losing ground, and it's just being replaced by drug therapy almost entirely. So it's become, even since DK wrote, it's become a very dubious field. There are some lights. Jungian psychologists recognize the oversoul and therefore the existence of some force beyond the little self. But many psychologists, my brother-in-law is one who's practiced all his life and recognizes, no intelligence beyond personality self. And he finally gave up his practice in frustration because he wasn't getting any results, not any long-lasting results. So it's a field in transition.
Right. And so this is an important thing to understand, that the soul is emerging in a lot of the crises that people undergo. And the techniques that can be used are all varied, and they respond to the various rays. So, for example, some people have to be shocked, and they have to be moved very very strongly. That could be a first ray technique. Many times people have to have a very safe environment in order to even open up. That's a very second ray technique. A lot of people, you have to meet them where they're at, and if they're very intellectual and highly mental, you have to be able to meet them mentally. That could be a third or a fifth ray technique. So the various techniques that we learn through the rays, we then apply to either our friends or people that we speak with. We don't even have to go as far as talking about a psychologist and a client. We will have opportunities, and you will all have opportunities in the course here at Moria Federation to look at situations from a psychological perspective and say, how would you fix this? How would you express, help this particular person with that and that particular situation? But the rays play a very, very important part in how we approach that. I have found that just speaking to my children or speaking to friends, that I use various ray techniques to elicit from them certain things. And then I make suggestions as to whether it's a meditation technique or whether it's to focus on a quality. It's certainly not telling them how to fix their problems, but encouraging them to use their own soul within. Comments? Okay. It is a platitude to say
that. I have a question.
Okay, question, Vera.
Yeah, again. I have a little question. Is it possible that a person can have sort of developed mental body, but yet, not sort of, but sort of well-developed mental body, and yet be polarized in astral body in any incarnation?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are still polarized astrally. Very few people are polarized mentally. Many people who are polarized astrally may be focused mentally. There's a difference between mental polarization and mental focus, which means that...
Can you explain?
I was just going to say that. It means that they can apply their thinking capacity to a lot of situations. There's a lot of... there's a lot of people that are still astrally polarized because they take things personally. There's a reaction within themselves, whether it's visceral, deep down, or whether it's outward, they express it outward in a Martian way, but yet they can still think, and they can think things through very well. They can be mentally focused in the books that they're reading. They can be mentally focused at work. So there's a major shift between mental polarization versus astral polarization. To be mentally polarized, one has to already gone through a second degree, to have already gone past the initiation that deals with our emotions, to have those emotions under control for the most part, so that the energy then is in the mental field.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? So mental focus, most of humanity is what we call kama manasik, right? Kama being desire or astral, manas being mind. So most of humanity works with mind and feelings. You think about somebody and you get a reaction in your system about that person. Or if you have a reaction to a situation in life, it makes you think about how to handle it, what to do. So there's a real movement of one with the other. They work together. Emotions, mind, emotions. Very few people can learn to really separate the two. And that's what our task is, for the most part, is to learn to really separate the two. Okay, gentlemen, comments?
Yeah, that what you were just saying is exactly right, in that the concept of consciousness is separate from the concept of developing the body. So you can develop great facility intellectually just by having a great education and using your mind. There's scientists up at Los Alamos who are astrally polarized, even though they use their mind as a very sophisticated instrument. It's that development is not in itself an indication of consciousness, which is what it takes, as Eva said. It's not finally completed until the second initiation, which is, most of us have not taken the second initiation. Now, I think when you've recognized the observer in yourself, for instance, this happens to me all the time. I have an emotional reaction, and then this other part of me notes that I'm having an emotional reaction and is somehow outside of it. It's aware of the duality that's taking place. And it really allows me to not be totally identified with that emotional reaction. In fact, very much so. So I would say that I'm in a process of transition between, one polarity and the other. And I think a lot of us are, especially aspirants, disciples, first initiates, are making that transition.
The word polarization, going back to what Francis said, speaks to the level of consciousness one has reached. So if one is astrally polarized, that's where their consciousness is, basically. But the work then is to try to use the mind, and to use the mind to harness and control. I don't mean suppress. I mean control those emotions. Much like the reins of a horse, We work on pulling this way or that way, bringing it in so that there is a measure of control there. The example that was offered by Francis is excellent. Think of business. Think of science. Think of technology. So many people are mentally focused, but they're still astrally polarized, because their consciousness hasn't reached that state. Remember, soul dwells on the mental plane. So the only way really to eventually become soul infused is to be able to work our way through the mind. See, mind is not necessarily mental. Mind is a combination of mental matter and consciousness. So
and
using the mind is a lot more than the intellect, the mental capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would add to it in a I think of the kind of metaphorical term, you know, if you are mentally polarized, you can walk on the water and you'll never drown, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You may have a person may have an intellectual genius or, for a certain particular area, mathematics, economics, but then when you get into a room and discuss something like gun control, they start reacting and they drown. They drown emotionally. They get all tied up with their sticky astral whatever. Mm-hmm. And and a person who's mentally polarized will maintain, they can walk on the water, so to speak. What is that old New Testament story where Christ or Jesus, whatever, in the boat, and a tempest comes up and the disciples are all starting to get really nervous, but he wakes up and he walks on the water, so to speak. And then Peter wants to get out there and do the same thing, and he seems to be doing fine, but he starts sinking. He starts having doubts and whatnot, Mm-hmm. It's a good story mm-hmm. to kind of illustrate.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. You clarified very well a few points. Thank you.
And if that wasn't complicated enough, there's a third consideration that I just became aware of at this last conference, which is that the soul, completely separate from the two issues we just talked about, which is focus and polarization, right? Those are the two ideas we just discussed. And then there's this third concept, which is which body is the soul working through?
Yeah.
And this is something other than polarization. For instance, you can be mentally polarized and your soul can be working through your astral body in order to accomplish certain purposes, and in service. Because certainly if you're mentally polarized, you're here for the purposes of service. As Eva said, you're a second initiate at least. I can think of, for instance, those who are on the even ray line, like the 2-4-6 ray lines, that might be mentally polarized or who are mentally polarized, but are their work is to be done through the astral plane. Mm-hmm. So that's just another wrench to throw into the works. It's none of these things are simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think that the exercise that we did at the conference about trying to figure out, through which vehicle, one, the personality was working through, and two, the soul was working through, is a difficult exercise, and it requires a lot of thought on our part. It's not like we have a master who can just tell us that, like he did with his disciples. But I think before we can even approach that, I think we have to become quite comfortable with, one, what is our purpose, as best as we can try to understand our purpose, and two, the rays. Become really comfortable with the rays, basically on five places. Doesn't mean that it's etched in stone. We have people that have been in this work for 20, 30 years, that every now and then someone throws a major wrench into their thinking and they consider changing a ray that they've been holding on to and believing that it is so for so, so long. So it's constantly a work in process and in progress. It's continually evolving, changing. We have to stay very flexible with that and open. But still, learning the qualities of the rays and being able to be the observer, like Francis said, can really help you see the rays working out in your vehicles. The observer technique is so vital and so important in all aspects of our lives. And I use a very, very simple example to give people about using the observer is to start using the observer when you're doing mundane things. So for women, it could be standing at the sink and preparing a meal or washing dishes. There's a part of you that can observe yourself doing that without comment, without judgment, without criticism. The observer, the true observer, doesn't criticize. The minute we start to criticize, we know it's not the observer, it's the judge in us. So we observe ourselves in action, doing things. Once we get comfortable with observing ourselves more and more, you observe yourself driving in the car, you observe yourself in traffic, you observe yourself then doing things. After that comfort level is there, then you bring it into observing yourself in conversation. Always that part of you that can watch. Yes, it's a duality, but for the most part, we are living in dualities. You know, fusion eventually happens, but for the most part, that aspect of the observer is still an aspect of the personality. Eventually, it does become the soul that is the observer, but it takes a lot of work. Nothing is that simple. If it was that simple, we'd all be saints. We would all be saints by now, right? So it requires work. But using the observer technique is just marvelous. It really is. It's a wonderful, wonderful technique. And Francis, thank you so much for bringing that up. Something I haven't talked about for a while.
Yeah. It's. I think once you become an aspirant, this quality of being the observer kicks in and stays with you through, you know, the entire process. It's what lies behind DK's recommendation that you keep a diary, a spiritual diary, and that you go back over your day and look at how you handled things. This is a way of even further articulating the process of self-observation.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So, more questions? Otherwise, it's going to be almost time to say our goodbyes. I'll do a Michael thing. Ask, guys, ask. I'm just looking to see if there's any questions that have come in. There is one here from Risa. Mind is above the emotional. When we use the mind, study, etc., it soothes and teaches and directs the emotions, the astral below it, because the mind, if we look at the constitution of man, we all know that page, right, with the various levels and the chart, we see that the mental plane is above the emotional plane. And therefore, the only way that we are going to learn control of that emotional plane is by using the mental, by using our minds. And again, the observer. It's the one a wonderful thing. Usually the observer kicks in after the fact, after we've blown it emotionally. That's okay, because at least we recognize that. At least we see, I really, really lost control there, or I really didn't handle that very well. But without being hard on oneself, you just recognize that the emotions got the better of you. So next time, you try to bring the observer in a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. That's a little earlier.
And the observer can also, for instance, one of the things that I pay attention to is the response in my chakras. For instance, you'll find that if you lose it emotionally, like through irritation or anger, that you'll literally feel your solar plexus just blow up. You know, it's you'll experience it directly, and it's becoming aware of those energy fields is a really important part of this work. You know, where is your energy?
Annabelle has her hand up.
Yes.
I did unmute her.
Annabelle.
Hi.
Hi, Annabelle.
Thank you so much for today. It's really great. You mentioned keeping a spiritual diary. Is there just any more comment or direction on that? That's kind of a broad way to put it, but just anything, little specific advice on that.
Okay, some people like to journal, some people don't. So if it's not something that you like to do, it becomes a forcing process and not everybody wants to do it. So that's first thing. I find for myself, I like to write my insights, if I get any, in meditation down. Usually our meditations, as you know, our occult meditations work with a specific theme, whether it be a seed thought, whether it's working on words, whatever the theme is, that many times will elicit ideas and thoughts. And I've learned to use my computer rather than writing it in. So I immediately have a certain page open, and when I come out of my meditation, I jot down some of thoughts that I've had, some things that have come up for me in meditation. And of course, later on, when it's time to put together a report, voila, it's all there. There's a lot of stuff that I can then put together, coordinate together into a report as need be. So for me, that part of it works. Other people will journal and write down any kind of insights they get throughout the day as a result of having thought about something. Because as we ponder on a seed or on a theme that is a spiritual theme that either the Tibetan has written or is there for us in meditation, we might get insights later on in the day. I know that many times when I work on something in my meditation, I can go out on a bike ride and I'm by myself with my thoughts and I'm thinking about, does the same theme again and again. And then all of a sudden, I get ideas, I get insights, I get a download of information. And if it's not captured, and when I'm on my bike, it's not captured, many times I lose it because they're so subtle, they're ephemeral, it's very easy to forget it. So that part of it is important for me to jot things down as I come to it. That's my take on it. There's other people with different ideas.
Thank you.
DK specifically recommends, I think it's in one of the Dyna books, that when you become an accepted disciple, which happens between the first and second initiation, that you actually review your day 3 times. I don't do this, so I'm not speaking from on high here, but it just shows you how intense this process gets when your spiritual path becomes, in a sense, your whole purpose. So as an accepted disciple, for a 6-month period, that you journal 3 times a day and you rigorously go back through all your thoughts, actions, communications with other people, and you analyze them according to the energy that basically was coming through when you were doing that. So, it can be very, as Eva says, some people have a propensity for this, but at some point, this is, according to DK, an actual requirement for accepted discipleship. I don't do it, so I'm not saying I do it, so all of you should, but I do know that in retrospective writing, you can become more, you have to remember that when you express some aspect of unconsciousness in yourself, your personality doesn't want to become aware of that. It shows weakness, right? It doesn't want to reveal that to itself, which is one of the values of analysis, which of course is mental, right? So by shining the light of the mental on those areas of our unconscious and through retrospective writing or journaling, you can uncover specifically those areas that you need to work on.
Mm-hmm. Risa.
Thank you.
Thank you. Risa is reminding us as well that the Tibetan says to write down dreams, impressions, ideas, thoughts, see thoughts, revelations, and so on. Over time, they present a pattern to us which we will understand. So that's a slightly different take on things. Just, you know, write all these things down. Hope that helps.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, guys, this has been lots of fun. I'm so glad you all showed up and asked your questions. This was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sure my two partners here did as well. I could tell. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We'll do this again. I know that this is now going to be an ongoing thing that we're going to be offering webinars whenever there's an opportunity, because the webinar is being used for so many different things. So as soon as there's another opportunity, something else will be offered. Again, thank you very much. And a few things will be posted on the Union Forum. I will post a few links for you if you want to see any videos. And I know that Risa will post a book with a title. And if you come across any, Francis, that you want to post, that's the place to do it. Okay. So thank you all.
Eva?
Yes.
Eva?
Thank you.
Would you entertain? I think it might be useful for students who maybe didn't think they had the time or possibly didn't know that they'd be interested, have questions, that they post their experience of the webinar on the forum so other students can get a hint as to how different these are from the traditional webinars that we've been
doing. Great idea.
Great idea. Wonderful. So guys, let me repeat what has been offered by Joe. If you could post on the Union Forum your experience of this kind of webinar, and this way other students who have not joined us and have no idea what this is like can at least hear about it from you.
Okay.
Okay, and that would be very much appreciated. Of course, we only want you to say good things, right?
Right. Something along the line of, wow, it changed my life. You know?
So seriously, just give a sense of your experiences, and this way it might open it up so that we might have 25 next time. You know, 25 students would be great. Mm-hmm. So thank you all.
Very useful. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Great job, and I hope that everyone in the future who's, Sam, I hope you can get a chance. It's really great to have the video. I think that's an aspect of this that is very helpful for the students. They get a sense of the dynamic of the participants.
Good, because, you know, I had this control panel blocking me entirely. I didn't have to look at myself at all. I could only see you, Francis, and that was good.
It's amazing you could keep your concentration.
So this was very good, guys. I think three is ample. I mean, this was an experiment.
Absolutely.
To see how it would go. I know originally the thoughts were we need seven people, one for each course, but you know, it would get too cumbersome, I think, and too difficult to have so many different opinions and thoughts and so on. I think the three of us, or three well-learned individuals, know enough that we can handle this. This is what I thought. I didn't think it was going to be too difficult.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Thank you very much.
It was
okay.
Good, thank you.
Thank you.
Shall I end the webinar?
What do I do to end it?
You go to the file menu.
Not screen sharing, not dashboard, no. Not attendee list.
The file menu.
Way up at the top.
Way up at the top. File. Okay, I thought you said final. And it says...
There you go.
Leave webinar.
No, exit end webinar.
Okay, just a minute. Cancel.
End webinar. It's the last...
Leave webinar is end webinar.
End webinar.
As soon as you do it, it'll all disappear.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, thank you very much.